time for the best 60 minutes of your life. This is the Homer Hour, broadcasting live from the Gruber Law Office's One Call That's All studio at the Avenue in downtown Milwaukee, alongside former Packer Brian Belaga. Here's Emmy Award winner Homer.
The best 60 minutes of your day, the Brian Belaga Homer Hour. This is the show, first show I've ever done, in which I declare that fireworks are dead. They're done. They're like ice before the refrigerator. Any community that does fireworks, given the ability to have drone fireworks, is reckless. Nobody gets hurt with a drone. They look the same. All they have to do is add the sound so people think they're fireworks. Now, will people still shoot off fire? Of course. But there's no way any organization that's involved can justify fireworks with the ability of what's now with drones. Let's see if Brian Belaga, future Packer Hall of Famer, just a question of, have they, a question of when, not if. Do you agree with me on announcing today the end of fireworks?
Ooh. Well, like, you know, I'm
a community event, not for people. I mean, you know, you can't. People are always going to shoot them off because.
Yeah, like, I mean, listen. So here's the thing about for a community event, like, you know, the drone thing is obviously really cool, but there's a price to that, right? Like, what's more cost effective for a community to do, I guess, is my question, right? Like, setting up a drone event or setting up the fireworks, depending on the size of the township. Like, obviously, well, like a big city like Milwaukee could do it easily, no problem, right? But what about like a, you know, what like a town like I grew up in, Crystal Lake, Illinois? Probably fireworks are more affordable, would be my guess. But I guess it all depends, right? I mean, drones are cool, though, right? Doing that display
would be a
lot cooler.
Well, I don't know the cost. I assume the drones will be would be as inexpensive, but I don't know like that. Again, it's a question of safety.
Yeah, I mean,
so you're safety-wise, how much? Yeah, how much you're going to pay to make to know for sure that nobody's going to get hurt ever?
Well,
I guess
yeah.
a drone could fall. Yeah.
I mean, I guess a drone could malfunction, I guess, but I think there's just nostalgia of fireworks, man. I think that's always going to be the thing.
They loved ice for a while. They love horses when this car came in.
Yeah. No, you're right.
I mean, it's just better. There's, you know, it's just like AI. All right. All AI is statistics. Something that's able to do the greatest compilation of statistics ever. You can't beat it. Now, how you choose to use it is another thing, and the same would be with drones. I don't know all the particulars. All I know is that they'll get to the point where it'd be hard to tell the difference. All you got to do is throw some booms in there, right?
Yeah. I mean, listen, yeah. I think eventually you are correct. Eventually that will be overtaken at some point in time, for sure. At some point it will be taken over. Is there any town that you know that does that already for sure right now? Like, is there any official town like that does
it? I live in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, a suburb of Milwaukee, a strange one because it's kind of in the city. But I believe they're having a drone show today and then maybe fireworks tomorrow. I'm sure there is. But, I mean, we're very early in this process.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that's, yeah, you know.
And the technology of it is, it's
right.
new.
Someone's going to go one day, what, you had a rotary phone? What's the point? Well, we had one till they came up with something much better. And, you know, you can create, it's a visual thing. And they've now got a better way to do it. So I just want to announce today the end of fireworks. Doesn't mean they're going to end today, but. It will be almost impossible when the price varies for a anybody with any risk whatsoever to want to do fireworks when you have an alternative that is significantly less risky. All right, we moved on from that. I didn't want to spend any more time on it than that. I just wanted to be down as July the 3rd. I don't know who did the first radio show when they said the horse is dead, the car will replace the horse. But I'd like to join that group. All right, I did this. I'm embarrassed, but I'll admit I did it. I taped the Brewer game so I could watch soccer.
Oh, nice. What'd you think?
I still think they have these defensive lapses that are terrible, but I thought they'd play better, and the guy with the weird hair is becoming a star, right?
Luna. Yeah, Luna.
And I don't know where he came from, what he is, but so, and then I went back and watched the innings where the Miz or Smoke pitched, and it's just like anybody who throws really fast. He kind of lost control, walked too many people, and then doesn't have any effect on my thinking of how good he is at all. But it's tougher on the road and whatever. So it's one game. We'll see how he reacts. But I was going back and forth after a while. I couldn't keep watching the soccer. So this is a violation of 70 years of life. But and it's in this fundamentally meaningless tournament that I would guess in most years the U.S. loses to Mexico, right? Or has, or I don't know how often the U.S. has won this event. They get to the finals about every time, right?
They do get to the finals. They've done well in this tournament recently. Recently they've done well.
So they beat Mexico, or Mexico didn't make it? I don't know.
Or Mexico hasn't been playing well as of late in this tournament. They're obviously playing good right now, so... It'll be a good match. Mexico's currently the favorite to win this thing, this final. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. The only thing about, and again, I don't want to spend too long on it. The only thing that concerns me about how good the U.S. looked in the first half is that the second half was the exact almost opposite. There was nothing to the second half, and that concerns me a bit.
Yeah, who was it? To me, they're all the same. It's Costa Rica, Guatemala, Ecuador. Anybody who's offended by that, I'm sorry. Canada's different. But yeah, the other team was way more aggressive, and I don't know.
Yeah. They were better in the second half.
The weirdest thing people used to tell me about soccer that I never bought, you just don't want to be ahead two goals. That's bad. Like, what? Yeah, when you get ahead two, you've heard that too?
Oh, yeah. The 2-0 lead always is the worst.
I'd always rather be ahead two than one. And they're like, no, it's more complicated than that. And I said, all right, that's another example of soccer that makes no sense. Like, you're ahead two touchdowns instead of one in football. No, and that's worse. So no one would say that. That's crazy. But
yeah. That's the old adage in soccer, is the two-goal lead is the most dangerous lead, because they claim that when you're up two goals, the team seem to let off the gas a little bit because there's a false sense of security at 2-0, right? There's a false sense of security at 2-0, and goals can happen so quick, even though not a lot of games are high-scoring. A team can score two goals super quick, and then it's a tie ball game, and anything can happen at that point. You were really hoping, or I was hoping, that the United States would have put the third in early in the second half, and then that would have been smooth sailing, and it just never happened. And Guatemala played really well.
Well, I just want to let you know, even though you are Brian Bullock, I think it's as crazy and weird to say it for you to say it as anybody else, because that's what they're all saying this. Oh, so you'd rather be ahead 1-0 because you play that much differently, 2-0. Well, I'm a coach. I'm not going to let it happen. I'll do whatever I have to do to keep the team from playing so conservative. Or maybe you should play conservative, because somebody can look up the numbers. Let's get AI. I think a soccer team, when they lead one, when they lead, I don't know, if they lead by two goals, they win way more often than when they lead by one.
I mean, I'm sure the statistics are there, but it's
made up that soccer people get to say, because nobody really studies the damn sport well enough to go, look, you just got to stop saying this, because it ain't true. A baseball team, You get up two runs, now we've got trouble. Basketball team, Todd, we're in trouble. Football, people would laugh at it. In soccer, it exists. So I want it to be tested for somebody in the institute there. How much better your chances are of winning a game when you're ahead two goals in soccer versus one.
I mean, that would
right?
be a
that's
good stat.
That's what we're saying.
That's exactly. Yeah, that's exactly. Yeah. I mean, and it's probably, I mean, you're probably right. I mean, it's probably a better chance, but I don't know what it is. It's just like that superstition. I don't know why.
Yeah. No one knows what the norm is, like what it should be versus what it is. So maybe it does have some effect. I will defer to the Institute. You can go on Twitter, the percentage chance, because they have all that now in terms of at any point in the game, you know, what your percentage is of winning. They've got all those stats now. Jason Woolley coming up in a minute or two. He's amazing. He's not doing his show, but he's still coming on this show. He was on the last show as well. That's crazier than saying you're better off to be up one goal than two in soccer. Like, explain to me, Brian, how you don't do your show, but you do other shows. If I'm not doing my show, I'm not doing any show, because my show is the most important thing I do, and I'm not doing it. I'm not doing all that other piddly stuff.
I think it's just his dedication, man. He's got dedication. Oh. I mean, that's Jason
Woolley. Why doesn't
Woolley.
He have dedication to his own show then?
I mean, what is this show? Was it 3 hours? I mean,
it
it's
is
just
three
like,
hours.
Yeah,
this
it's 3 hours.
This is 15 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, so I guess it's a different time commitment, I guess, and I don't know what he's got going on. He's on assignment somewhere, I'm sure.
Yes, he is. Yeah. It is less time, but you know this, it does limit you to some degree, even if it's short. If you know you have to do it versus what you can do, just doing it whatever you want to do all day, because you have the day off.
It's true. That is true. That is true.
Oh, Jason Wilde, he takes the day off and still works. By definition, Ryan, that's not taking the day off, right?
No, that's yes. working. That's
yes.
working.
All right.
That's technically.
Technically, yes. And they have the big Packers show here at Summerfest where they talk about the Packers.
And he has his list of 20 most important Packers that he's dropping daily. So
well,
we get to
I
ask
don't
him
care.
About that.
I don't care what he says. I can tell you who the most important Packer is.
Who is it?
Well, I mean, it's Jordan Love in terms of. But the most important Packer for the team to reach a level is Cooper. If Cooper doesn't become special, then there's a limit to how good they can be. And I don't know who else you could pick on the team where you think the possibility of being special that to this point isn't special. And that changes everything in terms of how you'd have to play the Packers against that defense if he becomes special, right?
Well, yeah.
You guys address that.
Yeah, we can certainly talk about that because that –
Yeah. And other players might be better, but I don't know if you were going to guess on the team. I mean, even Jordan Love can't elevate that much because we saw how great he could be the last 8 games 2 years ago, right? We've seen it. I guess we've seen it from Cooper a little bit, maybe the same way. We saw it a few games last year when he was Defensive Player of the Week.
I think from Jordan Love, I think it's seeing a level of consistency for, you know, that same level that we saw in the 8 games. I think it would be for, you know, 12 to 14 games straight, right? Like, I think you're seeing a more consistent straight through level, right? Like, I mean, everyone's going to have a little dip here and there, right? I mean, I think that's normal through an NFL season. But more of a, like, straight through consistency, I think that raises the level of the team in general, right? If you see his play of 8 games that he had 2 seasons ago, and that goes for, you know, 12 to 14 games, how does the rest of the how does that season look then, right? Like, I mean, it looks tremendously different.
Well, I can ask you because you lived it. You lived it. Aaron Rodgers was like that. If I'd have been in the offensive line, I'd walk out there going, I don't know anything, but I know one thing. We can score on anybody with this guy. Doesn't mean we will, but every time I walked out on the field, I would have felt that we were better than the defense that we were playing because of the guy, how good the guy quarterback could play. Did you ever have that thought?
Every time. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Well, you essentially said it. That's exactly how we felt with Aaron, and that's how this offense would feel if Jordan Love plays that way, right? Like, I mean, we've seen that. Like you said, we've seen he can do it. Everyone knows he can do it. If he raises it to that level, that's how this offense is going to feel. Like, that's how they're going to feel when they take, you know, when they go out there every single time. They're going to go, oh, yeah, we're going to score. No matter what, we're getting three. It's just, do we get seven? And then Right. Do we do it every single time?
And that's, but you play, when you played with Aaron Rodgers, he had games in which he wasn't that good, right?
Yeah, there's always games. There's always
and
games
you just
where,
thought, ah, no big deal. Let's go. We'll play again next Sunday. Bring them on.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There was never a – there was never like, oh, my gosh, what was that? Well, I mean, panic. There was never any of that. It was just, all right, well, that's a one-off. We'll move on.
We're not there yet with Jordan Love. All these great questions for Jason Wilde. It'll be the Doctor of Football, Brian Bulaga, and the Professor, Jason Wilde, together. And I listen next.
ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app. I drank
the water. Can you fix my brain? The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour. I am at Summerfest right near the Gruber Law Office's Sports Zone. I think they even have pickleball this year. And, of course, food is given to us by Major Goolsby's. I'll have the world-famous Major Goolsby's Major Cheeseburger soon. Right now, the best segment of the Homer Hour on Thursday, the Doctor of Football, Brian Bulaga, because he's so nice, gets to introduce Jason Wilde, and they talk Packers like no other twosome on the planet. Doc, it's all yours.
Jason, good evening. How are you doing? We appreciate you taking time from your day off, technically, to join us.
happy to do it, and this is the best segment of the Homer Hour of the entire week, not just the Thursday show.
Yeah.
So, Jason, we all know you got your list of 20 most important Packers. You might have announced it today, or we're talking about it on KPN. Obviously, I don't know if our listeners heard it or if you talked about it or not. Who is on the list today of your top 20 most important today that you revealed today?
Well, so far, we are three players in. We started obviously at number 20, which and by the way, I'm going to admit I am clearly cheating. Brian, you know this because you're one of the people who I sought your opinion, but I'm we'll get to a few that we're going to double up on. There's going to be two names listed in one spot, which
what?
We all can agree is cheating, but they're connected in some way, whether mm-hmm. it's the left tackle competition or whether it's a couple of wide receivers that are in contract years or if it's two former first-round picks on the defensive side of the ball. I paired a few people up because I think they make sense to have a conversation about. But Luke Musgrave was number 20. Matthew Golden was number 19. And Evan Williams was number 18. And so far, a little bit of the feedback is Matthew Golden is too low. But then I thought, you know, that Brian Bulaga guy played with a lot of really good wide receivers during his time with the Packers. And he knows as well as anyone how hard it is for those guys as rookies, even ones that are high picks in the first, second, or third round, how hard it is for them to really hit the ground running. So with the group that they have, with the rookie status for Matthew Golden, I think he's going to produce for them. But I'm not sure that I would take a bet that says he's going to be their number one wide receiver in terms of yards or receptions or touchdowns by the end of the year.
Yeah, I mean, listen, I think where you have Golden at 19, I think that's completely fair in my opinion. Like, and people may say it's too low, but and that's okay. Everyone, that's what the list is for. It's for debate. But the room is it's got a lot of guys in it, right? I mean, and there's a lot of guys that have a lot to prove, and they're veteran players, and those guys are going to get a lot of reps, and they're going to get a lot of balls thrown to them by Jordan Love, and they're going to get a lot of the snaps. And I'm not saying that Golden's not going to get a lot of snaps. He's going to, but he's going to have to find his way in this offense early on. He's going to have to build the trust of Jordan Love and kind of find his rhythm in this offense. And LaFleur's going to have to find where he fits best within the scheme and certain plays and routes and packages. He's going to need time to adjust. And that's okay. Every rookie does. And like you said, I've been around a lot of guys that are really high-level receivers. And normally, I mean, at least I hadn't seen it. Not many rookies just took off running at the wide receiver position. It takes a little bit of time. And I'm not saying that he can't, but with the room the way it's set up, with the guys that are in there, I just think that there's a lot of targets in there, especially with the tight end room as well. There's a lot of balls to be caught in there as well. I think he's ranked appropriately. But that doesn't mean he can't have a great year. But I think where he's at is fine. And I think he's going to be a really good player. It's just, I don't think there's any need for people to get out of shape that he may not be the outright number one right away for the team right now.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought up the tight end piece of this too, because, you know, I think Matt LaFleur and Steno and the whole crew there, I also think they really want to have even more tight end involvement. That's why I put Luke Musgrave at 20. You know, he obviously has had some flashes of really good production, but he's had more injuries than he's had flashes of productivity. But I think they really do want to have a lot of 12 personnel, which obviously you know what that is, but maybe some of our fans don't. That's one back, two tight ends, two receivers. And if you're going to have a lot of plays in your repertoire with two tight ends on the field, that's that many more plays or that fewer plays for them to have three wide receivers on the field. And so do I think Matthew Golden's going to play a ton of football for them this year? I absolutely do. But if you want to get that many tight ends involved and you want to get that many wide receivers involved, that's a lot of guys that you're trying to get not just the football to, but just get on the field.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So next revealing in Williams, what's kind of your expectation for him this year? And what role do you see? I mean, obviously we all know he's a good football player. We know he's high level kind of, obviously I think he's going to take it the next step. I think he's going to make, you know, that second year leap that McCarthy always used to talk about, that everyone, when I was playing, that was kind of the big deal, right? The second year leap that he always wanted to see, year one to year two. I expect him to take that leap. Is that kind of what you think from him? Do you think he's going to get an expanded role, be a full timer like kind of McKinney is? Is that kind of what you expect out of him?
I do. And part of that is really what I thought was interesting from Matt LaFleur that I wrote about on Channel 3000 is the fact that when Matt LaFleur was asked, you know, what he needs to do this season to go to the next level, what he said about Evan Williams was that he has to figure out how to take care of his body. I mean, it wasn't anything about the way he plays or his football IQ or any of those things. It was basically just stay healthy. You know, he missed the last three regular season games with a quadriceps injury. He missed another game earlier in the year with a hamstring injury. And even though he was, you know, and I've made this comp before, and obviously I don't know if you guys actually overlapped at Iowa, but I know you overlapped obviously with the Packers, is Evan Williams reminds me so much of Micah Hyde, and not just because they wear the same number. And it turned out, when I talked to Evan about it last year, Evan said, yeah, he's one of the guys whose film I would watch all the time because I wanted to be like him.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if you think back to his style of play, Micah was a really smart, the coaches would always say, he's just a football player, which I always thought was a really, really cool compliment, right? Because that means you're not the fastest guy, you're not the biggest guy, but you darn well find a way to get the job done. And I think it's said with such respectfulness. And I think Evan Williams fits that mold. And so, you know, I think what they really would like, you know, they do have other safeties. They like Javon Bullard's flexibility. They like Ketan Oladapo, although he's more of a special teams guy. Heck, they even had Zane Anderson start a game last year next to McKinney, and he played really well. Another special teams foremost guy. But I think they would love to have that pairing of Williams and X for all 17 games. And one of the reasons is that Evan Williams' IQ is so high that it really allows them to use those guys interchangeably. And I didn't get into this because these are supposed to be kind of shorter vignettes. But I think one of the reasons why that's so important is because I think you saw during the second half of last season, after McKinney had like a pick in six games in a row, that teams were able to avoid him. And so if they're able to do things late in the play clock to alter what they're doing in the back end, so the offense thinks McKinney's going to be in one spot and he's actually going to be in another at the time of the snap, that will also allow McKinney to have a greater impact. So I think that's one of the reasons why I think Evan is a crucial piece. But again, this is why I sent this to you and Tausch and Brad Norman and a few other of our teammates, because I'll be honest with you, the guy I'm doing that I'm writing today, that'll be revealed tomorrow morning, was not on my initial list. And I was wrong to not include him when I stopped and thought about some of the arguments from a few of the folks that I kind of relied on. So it's not I just want to be clear. This is one list. We all do lists at this time of year, but I think it's a really good vehicle for conversation. And I know that other shows have used it to start conversations today and the last several days as well. And I really do want to spur those conversations, and spoiler alert, I really think it's probably going to spur some conversations when I get to number two versus number one.
Because I know the list, I think so too. But if you were to look at, because Homer and I brought this up too, do you, and obviously I'm not, this isn't even about your list, but Homer brought it up about the importance of Cooper. Because we were just talking about just the list in general, and I'm not asking you to say where Cooper is on your list. I know that's.
He damn well better be top five.
Okay. Yeah. He's very high.
But we were just talking about it, and do you think that if, say, regardless of if whoever is your number one, whether it is Love or who, it doesn't matter who it is, do you think that Cooper, him being probably, you know, might be the most important guy on that defense, regardless of whether he's the most important Packer player or not in his development as a player this offseason?
Yeah, I don't think there's any question he's an important piece. Absolutely, positively. I don't know what I should expect from him in terms of, will there be a colossal year two jump? Because if there is, because he played so well as a rookie, you know, is that going to mean that we're talking about a guy who's like an all-pro candidate? Or, you know, is he going to, and again, I'm not saying that teams are going to be game planning just to make sure they know where 56 is every snap, but he's kind of, from what he did last year, he's kind of in that kind of mold that you better know where he is. I'm curious to see how they're going to use him. You know, is he going to get to rush the quarterback more? But he is such a unicorn type athlete in terms of he can run stride for stride with a wide receiver. He can attack in a pass rush setting. At the same time, I do think, and then one of the reasons why they didn't play him as much as maybe Homer would have liked them to have played him last year, is that he did struggle with assignments and he did make mistakes there. And so if they're able to schematically cover that up, where he's doing less thinking, that would obviously help him be a colossal impact player. But I still, as good of a player as he is, you know, I still think the edge rushers are so vital to their success. They're playing a bunch of really good quarterbacks who have really good wide receivers at their disposal. They just have to do a better job of creating pressure without having to use blitzes. And obviously, if they're using Cooper as a traditional linebacker and they're sending him as a blitzer, you know, and they're not dropping people out, then there's going to be some vulnerability there if he gets picked up. So I'm really curious to see, and this is more the overarching thought I have about this team, is, you know, I think Jeff Hafley's a damn good coach. And I'm really eager after what they were able to do in year one, being top 10 in both yards and scoring defense against a more challenging schedule. Can they replicate and improve upon that? And for that to happen, certainly Cooper's got to keep playing well. Certainly, you know, Xavier McKinney's got to play well. But again, the reason why this is more of a important list as opposed to best player list, there's no question that Edger and Cooper, if we did best player, is a top five. But in terms of importance, like, they need those three corners to not stink. They don't have that stud corner. And they need both Lucas Van Ness and especially Rashawn Gary to be way more productive than they have been as two top 13 first-round picks. And so those guys' importance, you know, I think of it as how important is it that this guy plays well? And I'm not saying that Isaiah Simmons, for example, could walk in and do the same job of a Quay Walker or of an Edger and Cooper. I'm not saying that. But there was a reason why that dude was the eighth overall pick a few years ago. So maybe the way they run their scheme, maybe it's more about, you know, those linebackers can be productive, but they need those other guys to make much greater impacts than they did last year if they're going to be a better defense this year.
Jason, we have just about run out of time. The ability of those pass rushers and cornerbacks to be better will be based more on the greatness of Cooper than their own ability. And if he's not second-team All-Pro, I will be disappointed. I won't be sad. Great players. Did Clay Matthews make the other players on the team better at their position because of the defense having to deal with him? Of course.
Yeah, I understand that Cooper's your guy. Not to be confused with that guy that they had, that linebacker that you famously said, I love everything about him, but I don't know anything about him.
I never once put him at the level of Cooper. Cooper was what? Defensive player of the week, what? Twice last year?
Twice.
First of all, they didn't put him on the field. The only person who shut him down last year was the defensive coordinator.
Yeah, you definitely never put him at the same level as you put Cooper. But I feel like Cooper is your guy. Like, you have planted your flag on Cooper.
What did
Hill.
Your eyes show you?
I think he's good. I don't know if you're getting his Hall of Fame bust ready, though, and I think that's a little premature.
No, I'm not. But you talk about he doesn't
Packers
know
Hall
plays.
Of Famer.
He doesn't know
Homer.
Plays.
Will Walker,
we don't even know where he goes half the time, and you bringing that
will
up about Cooper.
Will he be a Packers Hall of Famer? That's what you always like to have.
Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. All right. We'll see.
You mean Bulaga? That's who you're asking about, right?
No, I'm talking about Cooper. Bulaga,
yes, I believe Cooper will be a Packer Hall of Famer, yes. I don't think I've ever missed on a Packer Hall of Famer. I'll have to check.
Yeah. All right, guys.
Do you?
Take care.
Hold on. Hold on. I answer. Jason, do you think he'll be a Packer Hall of Famer?
They would have to pay him a second contract. And
I'll take that as a no.
I'm still not sure who gets those these days. I want another year of really good production.
What? Is that a yes or no? What?
That's an I don't know. Of course that's what you're going to get from me. I don't know.
Brian Bulaga, what's your answer?
I have no idea. I mean, you can't answer that question after like, he didn't even play a full year. So, like,
correct.
I can't answer that yet.
Hey, let's check to see how many players. Was he Defensive Player of the Week twice, right?
Yes.
He was.
All right, let's check to see how many Packers, as a rookie, were Defensive Player of the Week twice. I'll bet the odds of them going into the Packer Hall of Fame is pretty good.
Probably, yeah.
Yeah.
My guy, Blue. Love you, Blue.
Bye. Thanks, Jason.
All right, guys. Take care. Be good.
Yeah, he thinks my nicknames are horrible, so. They're not even nicknames, he said, so he's going to make reference. How many people call you Blue? Lots?
It's mostly Tausch. Jason will every now and again. Yeah, I mean, Jesse. Mostly the Madison crew. Mostly
players on the team when you played for the Packers, did anybody call you Blue?
Yes, they did, yeah. Because Tausch started that.
Was there a reason why?
Like from Blue, like Blue Pulaski from old school.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah.
We'll get an additional discussion. And the Institute, go to work. Packer rookie defensive players that in their rookie year were two-time Defensive Player of the Week. And how many, and he didn't even play every game, right? There were games in which he had no chance, right?
Yeah.
He didn't play enough. All right. Next quarter. Won't be as good, I'll admit it. Next.
More of the Homer Hour coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app. Don't you love it? Don't you love it? No, I ain't happy
yet. But I'm waiting. The Brian Bulaga Homer Hour. I'm at Summerfest. Gruber Law Offices Sports Zone right near is fantastic. And, of course, everybody enjoying the fantastic food at Major Goolsby's. Yes, the Major Cheeseburger. I got it every day that I'm here. Now to Brian Bulaga and his great partner.
That's right. I'm here for my friends at Surfside. Summer's heating up, and there's nothing more refreshing than an ice-cold Surfside iced tea and vodka or Surfside lemonade vodka to break the heat. We all know what it is tomorrow, America's birthday, 4th of July, and let me tell you, there would be nothing better than to enjoy a Surfside. Whether you're by the pool, with your friends, barbecuing, doing whatever, there is nothing better than a Surfside. Let me tell you, it is the best thing to enjoy than having a ice-cold Surfside by your side. Listen, made with real brewed tea and real vodka, Surfside only 100 calories, 2 grams of sugar, and zero bubbles. That's right, no carbonation, so it's easy to sip and enjoy no matter what your plans are this weekend. Look for the can with the sunset stripes. Sold at bars, restaurants, and stores near you. Must be 21. Please drink responsibly.
Brian Bulaga, the Brian Bulaga Homer Hour. It's best with Jason Wilde, but, you know, he has things he has to do on his day off. All right, let's address your offense against teams with an outstanding player. You pick who they want, because I'm basically saying the odds of some of these people Jason's talking about playing better is more likely to occur because of the increased greatness of Cooper than their own ability. Maybe that doesn't happen. Name a great defensive player you played against on some other team and how it affected what you did or whether or not it made other players on that defense better because of that great player.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, I'll give you a perfect example because of how it relates back to the Green Bay Packers. Julius Peppers, when he was on the Bears, we had a protection, and we called it Pep Jet. So wherever Julius lined up, we slid the protection to Julius, and the tight end would thump or chip Julius on his way out. So we would break the huddle, and whether Julius was lined up on the left or the right, is where we would slide the protection to. So there was no protection in the huddle call besides Pep Jet, and then Aaron would call the routes, and we would walk up to the line and base that protection off where Julius was. And what that would do for, obviously, the defense, that would free up the other guys up front on that defensive line. They got one-on-one matchups. And guys knew if you were away from Julius, right, if you were the two linemen away from Julius, which a lot of the time was myself and TJ, because Julius lined up over the left tackle a lot, you were one-on-one with your D end. So you knew you were going to be on an island quite a bit. And that was going to be the matchup pretty much all day, was you and your D end and the guard and his D tackle one-on-one. And then that, what also that created was potentially for the running back, if there was a pressure, that he would be one-on-one with that, whether it was a linebacker or a safety, that he would have to be one-on-one with those guys, because the center wouldn't be able to peel off and help. He would be sliding to that side with the linebacker to that side of the ball. And it was just, that's the way it was going to go because of how dominant of a rusher Julius was, and you had to account for him.
I accurate in saying this, or am I overstating it making other players better? Is it you never stopped Julius Peppers because he was so good, or you at some point or somebody went, it's just not, this guy's just not that good, but we got to take our chances because of Julius Peppers?
You didn't want a certain guy to wreck the game. Now, we didn't run that protection every single time. Right. That wasn't something we ran the entire game. It was only in certain moments of the game. And you did that in certain moments because you didn't want a certain guy to wreck the game. But what that would do, because of how good Julius was, you knew when you had to take care of him, that would give the other guys golden opportunities to make plays. You were taking a risk that the other guys then would be freed up one-on-one, and it gave other guys great opportunities to make plays. And that's kind of where I'm agreeing with you on, is that a great player can give other guys one-on-one opportunities and great put them in great situations to make plays. And that's kind of what a Cooper can do. And now, based on the linebacker position alone, it's a little bit interesting because depending on what he's asked to do, now if he's rushing the passer or if he's in coverage, in the run game he can be an issue, because you know, when you're IDing linebackers and guards and things like that, have to climb to linebackers, and you're accounting for a guy like that in the run game, the guards feel like they got to get up to him quick. So the double teams aren't going to be as firm, and the D tackles can break through the line of scrimmage quicker, which then you don't get as solid as a double team with the two linemen, and things, penetration happens, and that's an advantage for the guys up front because they're so worried about getting up to linebacker level, which is an issue for obviously the run game. So there's things that a great linebacker can do that affects the run game, and obviously a quarterback, because Cooper, is effective in the pass game as well, because he's rangy. He can intercept passes. He can break passes up. He can guard tight ends. He can do things like that. Quarterbacks are also worried about him in coverage. So quarterbacks double think about where he is in coverage, things like that. So a guy like that, yes, he can affect multiple levels of the game in the run and the pass. And obviously, if he rushes the passer, running backs don't want to block him, right? They want the lineman they want the lineman to account for him. So then when you want the offensive line to account for a certain linebacker, that then puts a lot of different tools in the defensive coordinator's bag of who he can pressure. And once they figure out that they're accounting for a certain linebacker in protection, and now they can put different guys on the back and really start mixing up the pressure schemes and really start messing with an offense, which is great. So, yes, Cooper can have a massive impact for this defense if he plays the way he did last year. And I wanted to say this to Jason, but we got going. When you can have all pro players or Pro Bowl caliber players on all three levels of your defense, so you know, you got McKinney on the back end. If you can get Cooper to play at that level, at the linebacker level, and if we can get Rashawn Gary or Kenny Clark or one of those guys to raise their level of play, to play at that level, you have an issue on defense, right? Because then you have guys playing at that level on defense where you have an all-pro caliber guy at every level. That reminds me of, like, when we would play Seattle. That was the issue. You had those guys at Seattle that you had Bennett and Averill. Then you had Bobby Wagner. And then you had that Legion of Boom in the back. And you had all pro guys at every level that you had to account for. And it's a mess because you always have to be aware of where these guys are. And Green Bay can have that. They have the talent to do it. But they just – guys have to step up and show that they can do it. And I know they have the guys. They just have to play to that level.
The fourth quarter. We're so far behind, I may have to do it alone. Next.
More of the Homer Hour coming up next on ESPN Wisconsin and the ESPN Wisconsin app.
So Brian Bulaga's last comment will be his score for the USA versus Mexico on Sunday. Take it away.
Ooh, I think it'll be 2-2 at the end of regulation, and I think the U.S. will win in penalties is how I think it'll go.
Duly noted, Brian Bulaga, unlike Jason Wilde, will actually make a prediction. Penalty kicks, U.S. over Mexico. Brian Bulaga handles all kind of football. National next. Thanks to everybody here at Summerfest. Major Goolsby's, Gruber Law Offices, Sports Zone. Man, Major Goolsby's food is good. Next.